I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is the author of Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets. And it's a very interesting book. Jessica Pierce is with us. Jessica is a bioethicist. She's also author of The Last Walk and co-author of Wild Justice. Her home used to be a menagerie, but she writes that she's become increasingly uncomfortable with the very notion of pet. Scientists studying animal cognition and emotion are continually, she says, peeling back the mysteries of animal minds, revealing an incredible and often surprising richness in the thoughts and feelings of other creatures. And so she is worried that well-meaning pet owners may unwittingly cause harm by keeping animals in captive environments that may not meet their behavioral needs. She'll talk about that as well as the explosion in pet ownership in the United States, how we are treating our pets, how pet keeping has dark undercurrents and what those might be. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for her. I think we'll have more than a few. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we like to hear from you always. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Jessica, hello. Thank you very much for being with us. Oops, I got the wrong line here. Jessica, hello.
Hi there. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. You start the book, and I am amazed by this. There are 470 million pets and only 360 million people in this country. That's a lot of pets.
It's a lot of pets, and it's really been the last 40 years or so that the population of pets has surged past the numbers of people in this country, and it's a pretty astonishing number.
Why so many pets?
One reason is that I think it's becoming increasingly popular and increasingly common for people to bring animals into their home environment, and not just cats and dogs, but pretty much any kind of creature you can imagine somebody keeping as a pet, they probably are. And, you know, part of it is that they're just much more available and pretty easy to get a hold of. And there's been such media attention to how good they are for our health and our well-being that I think it's becoming the thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And your house used to be a menagerie. You're not anti-pet. You have, what, two dogs and a cat? Is that right?
That's right. I'm definitely, I cannot imagine my life without them.
Right.
But I have changed my feeling about what kinds of animals I'm willing to keep. Now I'm much less comfortable with animals that have to spend their entire life or most of their lives in cages, for example, birds, and hamsters and geckos. I still think that dogs and cats can have a large measure of freedom and positive social relationships with humans.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a problem with dog and cat keeping per se.
Well, you also found from some of those animals you described, like geckos that you had, that they just didn't live very long when they were confined, did they?
They really don't do well in captivity. Some people do better at keeping them than others, but I was shocked to read that in one study, at least, the mortality rates among reptiles and amphibians who become pets in the home is 75%.
Oh, my
within
goodness.
The first year. So, you know, you think, and goldfish, you think, well, they don't live very long. They only live a couple weeks or a month. But actually, their lifespan is more like 25 years.
Whoa.
They just don't typically do well in a tiny bowl on a dresser, which is often what their habitat looks like.
Dogs and cats are different, but yet you also write some pretty alarming things about how many irresponsible pet owners. I think the figure is close to, what, 25% of, is it dog and cat owners that have never taken their animals to a veterinarian? Really?
Yes, it's about a quarter of all dog owners, and it's slightly higher for cat owners.
Whoa.
And, yeah, I know. It's pretty surprising. You know, I think there are people who I've come across people who feel that vets are unnecessary and just trying to get in their pockets. And it's really sad for the animals because they don't have, you know, one of the things that I would worry about the most is attention to painful conditions, particularly when an animal gets older and may have osteoarthritis or some problem with their teeth. And these conditions can be really painful. And, you know, we aren't always attentive to signs of pain in our pets and just kind of ignore or say, oh, they're just getting old. It's no big deal. And don't give them the attention that, in my opinion, they deserve.
Right. Oh, it's so important. And sometimes I think it's been true for me. I have a very old dog right now. But he's getting older. He's got arthritis, certainly. But they don't seem to complain very much, many dogs particularly. They just carry on, don't they?
They seem to have great reserves of forbearance and patience. And, you know, if you think about it, animals have evolved to hide signs of pain and distress because it's, you know, it's not a very good strategy for success to show that you're weak and ill. So they're pretty good at hiding their pain. And so we have to be sort of super attentive to what's going on with them to make sure that we're noticing when they have a painful condition.
Mm-hmm. So, Jessica, you talk about dogs and cats and geckos and hamsters. What have we decided, and why did we decide what animals we would take in our homes?
That's a really good question. It probably has a lot to do just with human whimsy and circumstance. I'm sure that for a number of animals like the guinea pig, you know, it's a matter of, you know, animals that have been domesticated and that are tame and form, you know, feel comfortable in human environments. But, you know, if you look at the internet and see what people are buying and selling and keeping as pets, I think it's really evolving and changing, and there seem to be trends. I've noticed over the past couple of weeks or months or so, there's been a sort of spike in interest in pet foxes. For what
really?
Reason.
Pet foxes?
I know. And then, you know, before that, there seemed to be a spike in interest in pet sloths, who are completely adorable, but not really appropriate for the home environment. And I think a lot of it is probably driven by YouTube and social media, because you see these videos of these animals that are just impossibly cute, and you think, well, I gotta have one. And really what you see is the animals doing cute things and looking happy. And you may not see the backstory of how they're really doing or where they were sourced and so forth. So it looks like pet keeping is easy and fun and entertaining for everybody involved, where it may not be so entertaining for the animals themselves.
So there are actually places, and what are those places that are gathering foxes and sloths and other kinds of animals and selling them to the public?
Yes. If you go on the internet, it's not too hard to find pretty much whatever you want. A number of animals are illegal to sell, animals that are threatened, have threatened conservation status, but you can still get them. You can get pretty much anything. I don't know of any actual organized, you know, fox stores, but it's just a sort of a network of people selling animals, importing, selling animals, breeding, and people buying.
Mm-hmm. And then you look at the dog, particularly the dog and cat business. For dogs, you remind us of the way we indulge our pets. It's just unbelievable what's happened in the last, say, 10 years. We got spas, we've got organic foods. You remind us of higher quality than what's in our own pantries. We have hospice care, wheelchairs, prosthetic limbs for disabled pets, antidepressants, stem cell treatments, chemotherapy, and the list goes on.
Yes. And, you know, for the most part, I think these are wonderful things. They can improve the quality of life of our pets. But they also, I think, can help us look past more immediate problems, perhaps, in their care that, you know, you may buy your dog high quality, expensive organic food and all natural toys and take them to get their nails done at the spa, yet leave them at home for long hours a day and maybe not give them the emotional and intellectual stimulation that they need.
You talk, and I'd like for you to spend some time talking about this, that for dogs in particular, many of them benefit by having some work to do.
Yes, I do. And that's one thing that's really changed about our pet keeping practices over the last 4 or 5 decades is, you know, in the past, dogs and cats both were employed doing work for us. Cats were in the barn catching mice, and dogs were herding or hunting with us, or you name it. And it's become less and less, I think, a part of their lives. And I think that's too bad because animals need to have meaningful work to do. And I often, you know, my dogs, for example, I think they're one of their meaningful work that they do during the day is to bark at the post woman and the UPS guy. And, you know, we can get mad at our dogs for doing that, but I think recognizing that they need to have something to do. And so I really think a lot of dogs can benefit from being given the opportunity to do agility work or even chasing a frisbee or a ball. It's play, but it's also work.
And I think you wrote about when you talk about playing catch that they made this toy. Did you have you bought one of these toys where it was a tennis ball thing and it kept going automatically and your dog wanted you to play with that tennis ball, not the machine.
And I realized, of course, after spending $80 on this contraption, which is very cool, that the whole fun for her is that it's interactive. She wants to bring it to me and have me throw it. So, and I think that's, we sometimes forget that our dogs really want to interact with us. And another thing I try to do is not talk on my phone when I'm taking my dogs for a walk or not, listen to my iPod because that's time for me to be with them. Mm-hmm. Even though we are having conversations, it's pretty one-sided because I don't think they probably really care what I'm, everything I'm telling them. But I think it's important to be with them.
I was glad to see in your book that you talk to your dogs all day long. You work from home because I talk to my dog all the time, too. And I keep thinking, because I'm with my dog by myself for long stretches of time. And I'm thinking, am I kind of nuts here or is this an okay thing to do? But it's
okay.
No,
I think you're not crazy and you're not alone. Or if you are crazy, you have a lot of good company.
Good.
I think a lot of people talk to their animals a lot.
Yeah.
And it's. Yeah, it's just part of my day.
Yeah, it is mine too. Well, we're going to explore more the dark undercurrents of pet keeping, breeding facilities, wholesale marketplaces where animals are sold as our guest writes, like guns or toys, the high mortality rate of certain animals. We've already mentioned some of that. A shockingly high number of animals being exploited or physically abused by owners, punitive training methods that leave animals traumatized, and the list goes on. Our phone number, one line is open if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter @KDunnShow. Our guest is the author of Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets, Jessica Pierce. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls for the author of Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets. Jessica Pierce is our guest, and Tracy from Wauwatosa is our first caller. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a black lab German Shepherd mix. She's a year old, and when I got her from the Humane Society, required to take classes, which was great, but the whole thing is about you're supposed to crate your dog. So I bought a crate, and I just didn't have the heart to crate her. And you hear of how dogs are descendants of wolves and they're den animals, but it just doesn't seem like if you're going to work and you're gone for 8 to 10 hours, it just seems like a cruel thing to do. So I have never crated her, and I haven't had a problem with her behavior. I just think it's wrong for like 8 to 10 hours to crate a dog.
It's a long time to do that. Jessica?
I would tend to agree with you. You know, I think it's one of those issues where, you know, pretty much everybody you talk to is going to have a different opinion about it. And there may be dogs who are perfectly comfortable in a crate. I think that's too long for any dog. But some dogs, and I have had a dog, he's no longer alive, but a dog I had a few years ago also really hated the crate for no apparent reason. And I think it depends a lot on the individual, and I agree with your instincts on that one. And if you're not having any behavioral issues without the crate, then why do it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the whole thing about them being den animals, I think wolves just are in the den when they have the pups, from what I've read or heard about. So to use that
Yeah,
as
and, you know, that raises a really good point, which is that even though dogs are descended from wolves, they are not wolves. They're a very different animal. And a lot of assumptions that we make, and I think the most striking one, it has to do with how we train dogs, you know, whether we're the alpha of the pack and this whole kind of hierarchy, which we think, you know, related to wolves, doesn't actually turn out to translate very well to dog behavior. So I think that you're raising a really important point. Dogs are not wolves.
Thanks, Tracy, very much for your call. Renee writes on Facebook, yes, of course we should keep pets. Pets are family, and they also help us emotionally and physically, but it depends on how the person treats the pet. Pets must be treated with compassion and kindness. If some people are only keeping their pets confined and neglecting them, then the answer is no for those types of people. Sort of an add-on to what we were just talking about. And there are a lot of people who don't pay any attention to their pets and who don't treat their pets very well, Jessica.
Yeah. And one thing that really surprised me when I started researching this book, I thought that abuse of animals, the kind of horrific thing that you read about occasionally in the newspaper, like the dog whose mouth is duct taped shut to keep her from barking, you know, I think these are really rare instances. But when I started researching the book, I signed myself up for various Google alerts on pet abuse and pet death and really various other unsettling topics. And I was shocked at the things that were rolling into my email box every day. I mean, it wasn't one case. It was 5 or 6 or 7. And these are only the cases that get reported and get some media attention. I think it's a much more serious problem than we've really acknowledged as a society. And a lot of animals are getting hurt, and they're really vulnerable because they're in the home. It's a very private sphere. People are not watching what you're doing the way they might be in other realms of animal use, like a zoo. There's really no oversight. There's nobody coming in for inspections. So the animals are really on their own, and it's up to, as the Facebook post suggests, it's really up to the compassion and responsibility of the individual pet owner, and a lot of people really have no business having pets.
So how do we make sure those people don't have pets?
I'm not sure how we do that, other than one thing is we stop what, in my opinion, is a kind of irresponsible media coverage of how easy pets are and how wonderful they are for our health, because I think the impression that one gets is that everybody ought to have one. And that's simply not true. I think the people who ought to have pets are a pretty small population of us. And so just it shouldn't be the norm for every single family or household to have a pet. It needs to be only those people whose lives are set up for it and who really are willing to make the commitment to, you know, the lifelong care of an animal.
And sometimes, as you write about in your book, that includes people who love animals but understand their life situation, and they're busy taking their kids to sporting events and they're taking trips, and the dog or cat or whatever would be home alone a lot. And those people, animal lovers, have decided we can't do it right now.
Yeah, I think some of the most responsible pet owners I know don't have pets for exactly that reason. They realize that their lives are not set up for it. And as all of them,
oops, hello,
a dog or cat will know your lifestyle. If you want, you're in this responsible and compassionate pet owners. It's hard. You don't like to leave your animals, and you know, you worry about who you leave caring for them, and going to work for 8 hours. You worry about your animals.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Definitely.
I think we're going to need to have to call you back. The phone is coming in and out of being audible, and it has to be audible all the time for us to hear you. So let's call you right back. This hour, we're talking about our pets and what we have taken in as pets, and sometimes we need to ask whether morally it's a good thing for us to keep a pet, either because it's confined, we don't see them very often, or there are certain animals that simply don't thrive in cages, and we're keeping them there, cutting their lives short, and not realizing what we're doing. The author of the book, Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets, Jessica Pierce, is our guest this hour. She's a bioethicist and is also the author of The Last Walk and co-author of Wild Justice. We're welcoming your phone calls, and we have many of them coming in. They're all so interesting. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we'd love to have you like us, and then you'll get little notifications of shows that are coming up. It's an interesting page. I wouldn't say that unless I thought it was an interesting page. And so that's a good thing for you to do, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. All right, Jessica is back, and let's go to Lynn in La Crosse, our next caller. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to talk a little bit about birds. I have 3 adopted, rescued birds, and I would like everybody and anybody out there thinking about adopting a bird to know how much care they need. And it breaks my heart to find people adopting birds and putting them in cages all day. I have 3 parrots. And they're out of their cage on regular basis, but they are so intelligent. And I don't know. I just wanted to say that. Birds, people, don't adopt them if you can't take care of them.
Jessica.
And I completely agree with you. Parrots are among the most intelligent creatures on earth, and I think we're learning so much about bird intelligence in other species over the past decade or two that really should give us pause, keeping them in small confined places where they really just, I mean, birds are meant to fly, and I just thank you for that comment. I totally agree with you.
Thank you, Lynn, so much for your call. Diane in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for coming and talking to us, Jessica. I heard you speaking earlier about keeping fox as pets. Uh-huh. And I have heard that some people really enjoy having fox as pets, but I wanted to make sure that your listeners understood the difference between farm-raised fox and wild fox. Within Wisconsin, you're not actually legally allowed to keep wild animals as pets. So that would be, you know, our red fox and gray fox that we would have here in Wisconsin, as well as any other wild animals. There are a lot of farm-raised options for pets, including fox and skunk and things like that that people are legally allowed to have as long as they've got the right licensing and everything like that. But I just wanted to make sure that your listeners had kind of understood that that difference.
Well, why would you want to have a fox as a pet, though?
Well, you know, it's an interesting idea. I mean, to have foxes pets, they're, I guess you could call them smaller versions of a dog, and they're big and fluffy, so maybe some people enjoy that. Whether or not that's a good thing or not, I think is a different discussion entirely that mm-hmm. I think Jessica would be a great person to talk to about. But I just wanted to make sure that that difference between the wild and the farm-raised was really important to understand.
Yeah. Thanks, Diane. Thanks for the call. Should we have any kind of a fox as a pet, Jessica?
I would... I hate to make absolute statements. I would tend to say no, but I'm certain there are listeners who would disagree with me on that and would say that, you know, they have a fox who, as a pet, who really, you know, has formed a bond with them. And if you have the space, the habitat, if you can provide what a fox really needs, I guess, as the caller suggests, you know, what are your motivations? Do you think a fox is fluffy and cute, and is that a good enough reason to keep an animal captive in your home? And I would just like to note about farm-raised animals that often the conditions on these farms are pretty gruesome. Not always, but often. So if you are thinking about getting a fox, a farm-raised fox, really do some research into where that fox is coming from and if the conditions were humane.
And maybe a guiding principle for us is that we always need to ask, if we're going to take an animal in, what does this animal need? Does a fox
Yes.
need to be in a house somewhere? I don't think so.
Right. What do they need, and can we provide that? And I think we need to be honest about the what do they need question, because it's easy to, I think, bleed that into what we need and what we want.
Well, and they're not being sold that way, as you remind us, all these places selling these animals. They're certainly not telling you you need a cage this big or you need a bowl this big for your goldfish who's going to live 25 years old. A little bowl isn't going to do it.
Right. Yes.
Well, do we need some kind of legislation or something that would make that prominent? Before you buy this goldfish, here's how you take care of a goldfish.
I think it would be very helpful. I mean, it's going to be hard to legislate any of these things because there's a really strong pet industry lobby. And however, I seem to recall there was some discussion recently about, I think it was PetSmart, maybe requiring employees to hand out care sheets. I can't remember the details, but at any rate, I think it would be a really good first step for any operations selling animals as pets to supply the information necessary to at least provide a decent environment. I think it'd be hard to probably provide enough information to provide a good environment necessarily, but
thanks,
that would be very helpful.
Yeah, it would be. Thanks, Diane, for your call. Eric in Beloit. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi.
I wish I could give you the gigantic Facebook thumbs up for the topic today because it's so appropriate. And I'm a dog lover, and I've been caring for them for years. And the topic of designer dogs just makes me go nuts. But anyway, I wanted to bring up and see if your guest knew anything about an unusual pet that has been appearing here, at least in the area that I know of, called a sugar glider. It's something akin to a flying squirrel, and I don't know a lot about them, but they seem to be becoming more popular here, and I'll let you go and answer it, but I'm just curious if she knows anything about those.
I know a little bit about them because my next-door neighbor had sugar gliders for a time. They're really cute. They make a really strange kind of screeching sound when they get scared, and they're very timid. And I think they're one of these animals that I would probably say are not the best pet because they are so timid. I don't know a lot about them, though, so maybe I'll stop there before I get myself into hot water.
Hmm. But you're aware that they become popular as pets, Jessica, or
yes.
Not?
Oh, yeah. I think they're one of the more popular of the so-called pocket pets.
Really?
You know, the rats, hamsters, gerbils, guinea pigs, and sugar gliders.
Hmm. William sent us an email. He's tired of nuisance barking that's ignored by owners, unleashed pets in parks and nature trails, and failure to clean up dog feces in public areas.
Absolutely. I am, too. And I think one of the most important things for pet owners who want to be responsible is to respect the feelings and concerns of people who don't have pets and maybe don't like dogs or cats. Not that people who are bothered by, the feces in the park are people who don't like dogs, or they're not necessarily. But I completely understand why people get irritated by pet owners, because often we are irresponsible and let our dogs bark at all hours. And it would do a lot for animals if pet owners were more responsible about being neighborly. Because I think what happens often is that people get really angry, and then that anger gets taken out sometimes on the animals themselves, who really are not so much at fault. And in the town where I live, we'd have had a couple of instances of strychnine poisoning of dogs in backyards. And you can only imagine that, you know, there's some kind of neighborly conflict going on there, a dog who won't shut up, or, you know, owners that don't bring a dog in during the day when they're gone, or whatever. And that's really unfortunate, because it's the animal who suffers.
It sure is. That's terrible. Kathleen in Madison. Hi.
Hello. Somebody actually hinted at it earlier. My concern is the designer pets. I just can't stand seeing some of these animals that are produced for what some people think is cute, but they're crippled by the genetic damage that's caused to them. So you look at pugs, and it's pretty universal. Pugs can't breathe well. Their entire lives are spent snuffling through this inadequate nose. Or you have, I had a friend whose dog was one of these designer dogs. Its eyeball actually just popped out of the socket.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's some pretty severe, what I consider to be a type of abuse. That's genetic abuse, just to make this animal come into existence with painful, miserable conditions. I wish people would get more, stop being selfish. I think it's cute. Well, that doesn't matter. This is a little animal person that has to live with these traits, you know?
Yes, and I apologize to the pug owners out there, but I tend to agree with you that we are causing numerous dogs and perhaps cats to a life of diminished quality of life. If they can't run through a field of wildflowers because they can't breathe, that's really sad. And there's no real reason for it. I know there are people who just love certain breeds, but I'd be better if we could breed dogs in ways that sort of were aimed at well-being rather than a particular look.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that comment. I completely agree with you.
Well, and then you've got this whole industry, which is sort of beyond my comprehension, although I have put a hat on my dog at one point because I and took a picture of it, I must admit. But this whole business of costumes and, diamond-studded necklaces and then toenail polish and various costumes to make our dogs dress them up like they're our little children.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon for sure. And I admit to having also dressed up my dogs. I probably wouldn't have done it myself. I can blame it on my daughter. But, you know, and I think for the most part, it's harmless. And our dogs probably enjoy basking in our attention. But where it gets problematic for me is in cases where people will spend money on cute outfits but won't take their dog to the vet because it's too expensive.
Right, yeah.
So that just seems like misplaced priorities. And then this trend that I noticed as I was researching the book of animal bling that is actually permanent, like tattoos and earrings. And in my opinion, that's just wrong. That's taking it
right.
a step too far.
Yeah,
because
right.
it causes the animal pain.
Yeah. Lori in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, Lori, go ahead. Hi.
Oh, I've been a dog groomer for about 5 years now, and I just wanted to mention something about the breeding. I know someone brought it up, but, I mean, the breeders tell these pet parents that, you know, your dog doesn't need to be groomed or, you know, they don't need this. And when they actually do need the grooming, they do have mats, you know, they need to be brushed every day, especially like doodle owners come in and they said the breeder said they didn't have to, you know, do this and do that. And it's just really unhealthy for the dog and its skin and its coat. And these breeders just, you know, give these puppies away way too early from their mom and they bring them into the grooming salon and we can't even groom them because, you know, they're too little. They're still too young to even be taken away from their mother.
Yeah. Yeah, you raised two important points there. One is this issue of taking puppies away from their mothers at too young an age, and that's a really serious problem for canine welfare. They don't get the bonding and they don't get proper socialization. And then the issue of, I think a lot of people think of grooming as a kind of an extra, kind of like going to the nail salon for us. But for many dogs, it's actually an issue of health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important point. Thank you for raising it.
Thanks, Lori, very much for your call. Emmanuel in Minneapolis. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I have an observation. And which leads into a question. I watch and read a lot of documentaries on canines, animals, you know, bears, dogs, foxes, wolves, dingoes, badgers, the like.
Mm-hmm.
A good majority of these animals live in burrows. African wild dogs live in burrows, and it's hot there. But my observation is that for majority of the pets that I have seen from my childhood to now, and I'm 62 years old, no one seems to have noticed that dogs, and especially dogs for us, because most of us don't keep bears or dingoes,
right.
they don't properly give them the habitat that they would naturally adhere to, because I began to understand that animals naturally realize there is especially the ones in the U.S. and in the northern hemisphere where it's cooler, there's a freeze line that involves the ground and the level, sea level. So a lot of times, like bears, for instance, they burrow up in a hole or underneath the coldest part of the air so that they can survive properly and comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And my observation is that I haven't noticed anyone notice that about their pets or their animals that they keep that are of the canine type.
Jessica?
Well, I don't know about... that's a really interesting observation, and I'm not sure about canines and burrow building, although a lot of dogs seem to enjoy digging holes, and maybe that's a part of the motivation there. But your larger point is absolutely right on, which is that I think we can forget that our environment, like the ambient temperature and humidity that's comfortable for us, is not necessarily what is optimal for a pet that we bring into our home. And a more obvious example than a dog would be a gecko, who, you know, they may have quite different needs in terms of humidity and temperature mm-hmm. than we do. And in terms of burrowing, many of the small creatures that we bring into cage habitats, that we give them a little bit of bedding, they really do, mice, for example, really do need to burrow. And we deprive them of one of their basic behavioral needs if they can't engage in that behavior. So thank you for raising that.
Thanks, Emmanuel. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. The author of Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets, Jessica Pierce, is our guest this hour. She's a bioethicist. Our number is 800-486-8655. Lines have been very busy, but you can get through at this very moment. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, let's go to more phone calls. Alice in New London. Hello, Alice.
Yes. I was just wanting to say that I hope people, as they get older, start thinking about what kind of a pet they're going to have. We would all like to live to be 90 or 100, but most of us, by the time we get into our 60s, have to take into consideration that our lives are going to be possibly shorter than that. And if you get a cat or a dog that lives 12 or, in the case of a cat, 20 years old, it can be very cruel to take an animal, have them for 10 or 12 years, and then suddenly you can't anymore or you're gone. And one needs to think ahead and make sure that there is somebody you trust that is going to see that animal comes to as good an end as yourself.
Jessica.
Thank you. Yes. And that, this is a good opportunity to say that there are a large number of elderly dogs and cats in shelters who need homes, and they're often not the first to get adopted. The puppies and the kitties go, but there are beautiful older animals who make great companions for older people mm-hmm. because they have, you know, their exercise needs are somewhat less, they're calm, and they know who they are, and they desperately need homes and can make wonderful companions for older people. And absolutely right, you need to think about how long an animal lives, hopefully their entire lifetime, lifespan, and make arrangements for the care of an animal if you, and this is important for young people too, if something should happen to you, make sure that you have arrangements made for your pet to make sure that they go to a loving home that you trust. And thank you. Thank you for that.
Thanks,
comment.
Alice. Thanks for your call. Margaret in Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for a very important show. For quite a few years, I worked for a humane society, and my job was to take pets into the schoolroom in the lower grades and give talks on pet care and pet psychology, you know, how you should take care of your pet. And also, I also took usually two dogs with me. And these dogs, you said they need work. These dogs knew I'd put the kids on the floor in a circle, and the dogs would go around and greet each one of them. Mm. I always asked first if there was any child that did not want to do this, because some children are afraid of pets. And this is also a good way to get them used to seeing that pets are not are friends and not enemies. And I think, I don't know if anybody is doing this anymore. I'm quite elderly now, and I did it about 15, 20 years ago, and I hope this is still being done.
I hope so, too, Margaret. Is it, Jessica?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that in my community, dogs go to the library, into the children's library, and kids have an opportunity to interact with them. That's a really good question, and I'm not aware of any program like that in my area, but I think it's so important, because a lot of kids who, those who don't grow up with pets, and maybe even some who do, don't learn how to interact appropriately with animals, and that's where you can really get into danger with bites and whatnot, where if a child doesn't understand that, you know, you shouldn't run up to a dog that you don't know and stick your hand out, then you're creating opportunities for unfortunate things to happen. Mm-hmm. And so being able to go into the school and reach children who may not be learning this in the home because they don't have pets, seems like a wonderful opportunity.
Thank you so much, Margaret. Before we go back to phone calls, there's a short but important chapter in the book, Offering Better Protection, that we don't have time to go through all of these, but you have a very important list of what it is we need to do, the rights perhaps that our pet animals should have, Jessica. Could you highlight some of those?
Well, I think that I would like to see, at the very least, no more sales of live animals, especially dogs and cats, but really I would like to see all live animal sales in pet stores come to an end. Coming to a better understanding of how we're going to define what cruelty to an animal is, as it stands, you know, each state has its own definition of animal cruelty. Some are better than others. Some are more ambiguous. But coming up with a more rigorous legal definition of cruelty that would include, and I think this is really important, not just physical cruelty but also emotional cruelty,
mm-hmm.
Would be a huge step for animals. And I think cracking down on the illegal pet trade, the trade in exotics and
yes.
particularly animals that are threatened, is really important.
Mary Kay in Alma, hi.
Is it Mary Kay?
It's Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi. I think she just mentioned what I was going to say. I did want to say I'm glad that Diane called in earlier about the wild animals in Wisconsin, how most of the birds and mammals are illegal to keep as pets, and the DNR has a great website. If you go to dnr.wi.gov and then search Keep Wildlife Wild, they'll find all kinds of great information. And then my other comment was that I really hope that people think twice when they want are thinking about some kind of non-traditional pet that perhaps was wild in South America, Central America, Africa, because of the illegal trafficking in pet trade and how that is damaging these wild animals in other countries. So unless they know that it came from a reputable breeder in the United States or something like that, that concerns me. And I think that was just mentioned, too. So I just had wanted to bring that comment up, too.
Thanks, Mary Kay. Jessica?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the most important things that we can do as consumers is to know, if we're going to buy an animal, know where it came from and know the backstory, know what the larger reverberations of that choice are. I just saw a study a couple days ago on this topic about Indonesian birds. A number of species of bird are facing extinction because of the pet trade.
Mm.
And I think, I mean, these are beautiful birds, and you don't think when you go to bring one into your home as a pet that you may be contributing to the extinction of species, but you might be. So it's worth taking a really careful look at what species you're thinking about getting and where it came from. Was it wild caught or bred? And you know what's behind?
Mm-hmm.
What we pay more attention to where our tomatoes and grapes come from than our pets. And I think as consumers, you know, we have a lot of purchasing power.
Right, Jessica.
Industry. So
thank you so much for having written the book, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jessica Pierce, the book is Run, Spot, Run, The Ethics of Keeping Pets. Thanks to Chris Molina for producing this program, and thanks to Kiri Salinas and Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up. We'll be with you again next on Monday for All Things Political.